Well, hi everyone, and welcome to the Modern Cotton Story, sponsored by E3 Sustainable Cotton. I'm Jennifer Crumpler, Fiber Development Manager and Manager of the E3 Sustainable Cotton Program from BASF, and host of the program today. So I'm really excited. We've got a return guest on the show today, so I'm really excited, and actually excited because many of our listeners know this guest, but then also some of the great work that he is doing. So really excited to have him here, and also joined by industry consultant Bob Andeshek. So Bob, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Jennifer. Coming off a good weekend. How about you?
Oh, wonderful. The same thing. So, well, I'm really happy to introduce today's guest, who is joining us, as I said, for the second time on the program. So Crispin Argento is a managing director of the consulting firm, The Sorcery. And much like E3 Sustainable Cotton and how we do a lot of connecting growers to brands, Crispin does a lot of that as well, as he's also COO of FiberTrace, a firm specializing in physical and digital transparency for farmers and consuming companies in the supply chain. So Crispin, thanks so much for being here with us again today.
Thanks, Jennifer. It's great to be on again. You know, I really enjoy having these conversations with you and Bob. They're, they're often so honest. And,
yeah.
And I really am, you know, like this podcast, and feel honored to be part of it, because it's you know, we can talk about the truth without judgment, which is great.
Yeah, and that's Crispin. I love having the conversations as well, because like you said, we can have the honest conversation. And because we both have those same goals in mind and same things. And so I definitely really do enjoy it. So, and we're going to get in some of those topics. But for maybe some of our listeners who is their first time listening, or, you know, haven't listened since you've been on the podcast before, we all know you've had a very extensive career in cotton and fibers, you know, really a lot of experience in traceability, sustainability, apparel. But want to know if you just kind of maybe talk a little bit about your background so that our listeners can learn a little bit more about you.
Sure, Jennifer. Happy to share about my background, both professionally and maybe a little personally. As mentioned earlier, yeah, I have two jobs, but really, you know, beyond titles and the actual work we do, it's really both of those jobs that it's a shared objective, in that they're about bringing more visibility, collaboration, and trust through transparency into supply chains, and with, you know, supply chain actors all the way from the farmer to the consumer. And that's really, you know, at the core of what we do at Sorcery, as well as, you know, the technology that we have at FiberTrace. I grew up in Pasadena, California, so I'm a total city slicker. and of course, now I live in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, but, you know, my cotton career, I guess, started in 2011 when I visited a Pima grower in Central California. And at the time, you know, there wasn't really a, you know, sustainable cotton industry. There was the early stages of the Better Cotton Initiative, but it was really a lot of growers that were just investing in improved agronomics for the purpose of commercial efficiency. So which, you know, which actually helped to shape my perspective on sustainable cotton, which sees sustainability as a dividend of better business investment, right? I guess, you know, and it wasn't really until a trip to North Carolina, actually in 2015, where I got to see the whole supply chain, as it's really the last kind of living relic, if you will, of a full supply chain in, you know, the South with Vidala Mills, but also just with St. Patrick and some of the others out there. And you saw, you know, where the cotton is grown, the challenges that growers face, where it's spun, where it's knitted, where it's made into finished garments. And you realize just how difficult things are for that supply chain, which all of those, you know, those that whole supply chain is within like 100 miles of each other or something like that, maybe 150 miles, you know, in the Southeast. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to say, okay, well, there's the challenges there. How do you apply that to global, you know, supply chains? And then of course, I guess, you know, in 2017, I was hired to run the Organic Cotton Accelerator here in the Netherlands. That brought me from the US here as an American living in Europe. And I think through that experience, getting to really work closely with brands and closely with farmers, I saw that there was this huge disconnect between the demand side of the supply chain and then the supply side of the supply chain, which is, you know, starts at the farm. So, you know, through that experience, you know, we realized that there's this huge disconnect, this gap in the market. And so a partner of mine who sits in Karachi, Pakistan, we founded Sorcery together, and we've been doing it now for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. We worked with five brands and retailers last year, two suppliers, and we're looking to probably double that this year. So the momentum's good. I hope that gives you some kind of you and the reader, and not the readers, but the listeners, a bit of a background on who I am.
Yeah. And, you know, and I know we have a bunch of questions, but you said something, Crispin, that as many of our listeners know, I'm very passionate about, and I would love to get your take. You know, you mentioned how you started really working closely, and, you know, the past year you had five different brands that you worked with, really connecting them with some growers and looking to grow that. Crispin, over the last, let's say, 2 years, let's talk about, you know, with COVID or with just changing in supply chain, shifting globally, you know, things that have been going on. Do you find that brands are more open or wanting to do this more? Or do you think that it and meet the growers and get to know some of this transparency that's there? Or are you finding in your experience that, yeah, it's good to talk about and we want to do it, but they don't necessarily want to change their business model to put into action. You know, there are some, and there's some great ones that we've worked with as well. And I just find that some of them, you know, it's the conversation of, yeah, I think that's good. You know, yeah, we want to talk about it. And after you, you know, go through the hoops, explain it to them, but then it's like, yeah, we're really not going to change the way we do business.
Yeah, I think that, look, COVID and the you know, the volatility, let's just say, that has mm-hmm. come out of it, you know, reading Bob's blog and his posts and everything from shipping to the way that commodities work to the, you know, nearly $2 a pound price of cotton that we're looking at right now. Has created a lot, an environment where people are starting to ask questions. And I think that's important. But I would say positively, yeah, that you know, we have a lot of clients that are wanting to adopt these types of models. They just don't know how. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to kind of put yourself in the shoes of a lot of brands and retailers. And for the last two decades, they've effectively gone to the grocery store of the global supply chain and everything was ready on the shelf, right?
Yeah.
And I'll allude to that same image later when we talk about, you know, some of the challenges in organic cotton, but even the challenges in sustainable cotton. And so I think it takes a knowledge transfer, but it also just takes a willingness to go on this journey. And that's one of the reasons at Sorcery, we talk about what we actually deliver is transparency, fairness, and efficiency. Nowhere in that do we talk about sustainability. Because like I said before, if you put things in the context of business benefits and shared risk for all actors along the supply chain, it makes sense to just take this journey and to transform their sourcing practices to a better way. But again, that doesn't happen overnight. It's change management. And that is, it's important to recognize that you're changing hearts and minds, and changing hearts and minds takes time.
Yeah.
Crispin, you have to talk to me about New York Times. Got to. I mean, gosh, you were very well known in the trade beforehand, but my goodness, I mean, that story just exploded. And for those who aren't familiar, there was a story, right? I think.
Last Sunday.
Yeah. It was entitled "That Organic Cotton T-Shirt May Not Be As Organic As You Think." And the thing that got me about it, besides your quote, or at least one quote, was it was kind of a illustration of a lot of the things that you are trying to do at the Sorcery to correct problems in the supply chain, like you were just elaborating to Jennifer, okay, in terms of that connectivity between the farmer and supply chain and so forth. This is a big deal for our industry, you know? So yep. I was curious, what was your take on the story? How'd you get involved? It is significant.
Well, can I just say before you say that, Crispin, I laughed because I read the article and I was like, hey, I know that guy. I know him. Yeah, I know him.
See, Jennifer, he's famous. See?
He is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know, that was made for an interesting week last week in terms of just, you know, fielding a lot of requests from other reporters and inbound emails, both that were nice and those that were not nice, other things of that nature. But nevertheless, yeah. So I was approached, 6 months ago by the authors and didn't really know the context. They just said, hey, we're doing some, you know, research. So it's very clear that, the Times, being the organizations that they are, they put in a lot of time and effort and kind of a meticulous investigation into this. I think, and I actually found out because my mother had texted me at 6 a.m. Amsterdam time saying, you're in the New York Times. I'm like, I guess the article was released because, I hadn't heard anything about it for, several months. And so, of course, I got up and had my coffee and read it and was actually surprised to have the level of two things, the level of depth that they were able to capture by interviewing people. But also what struck me later on is that I was one of the only people that were willing to go on record, despite having interviewed a number of organizations, which just speaks to the level of shame and fear.
Yeah.
Not only in the organic cotton sector, but also I think, where we really are in the sustainable cotton industry itself. And I think the take home for me with that article, and as you said, Bob, it's stuff that we already know in working with a lot of the farmers in the supply chain and the suppliers, but it really just pointed to how dysfunctional the existing chain of custody system is within organic cotton, but also within sustainable cotton in general. Is that, again, it speaks to this huge disconnect that I spoke to earlier. The demand side is just not talking to the supply side, and we have to build systems that allow those folks to sit at the same table together. And that means farmers at the head of that table, from our perspective, to drive those conversations and to deliver real value, right? I think, I guess I'm speaking, a lot of people may have interpreted that as like an affront to organic cotton, but it wasn't at all. It was really a wake-up call to the sector that the future is about accountability. It's about data. It's about putting, it's about shared responsibility. And that to me is a big outcome of that discussion, right? Or that article, I hope.
Yeah.
I hope people see it positively and not negatively.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, a lot of the article for me, as I've talked about and listeners know, I've spent my entire career kind of on the other end of the supply chain from Chrisman in the working with the growers and the farmers and really understanding what they're doing. I love the article because for me, whether it's organic, sustainable, whatever it is, I think it goes back to, how do we protect growers? One of the things is, all right, what is, how do we protect those growers? And, I really, whether it's organic, whether it's conventional, whatever it is, looking at, okay, well, what is, for brands to secure cotton and place their orders, there's multiple steps from the time it leaves the farmer to the time it gets to the shelf. So would love to just know from your perspective, when you kind of thought some of it, how can farmers really be protective or from many or some of those practices that were described, in the story and some of the things that we both know or see that are happening?
Yeah, I think the story itself doesn't speak to, the farmers themselves. Obviously there are, when we look at organic versus conventional versus something in the middle, let's just say if we're even, recognizing this continuum, right, whatever that means. But we often forget, we have to, again, put the farmer first and say, what does that farmer need to run his or her business to the best of their ability, right? And whether they choose organic or they choose something else, we have to honor that and recognize that that's where they are in their agronomic or their journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as far as protecting farmers, one of the things about the organic cotton supply chain is it sells this amazing, beautiful story, right? And it's a story that consumers love, but when you really peel back the layers, you see that it's not always as pretty as you think. And that's also the case for other sustainable cottons, or we don't empathize and understand how difficult it is for farmers to actually do these things and run a business that, generates the revenue and or you know, the outcomes that they want.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, you know, one, we have to protect growers, we have to be honest about the challenges that they face. And with those challenges, we need to then make the investments in farms and rural communities all around the world, not just in the United States, but in India, in Pakistan, in China, in Turkey, you name it, anywhere where there's cotton that's grown. Because part of what happened in organic is that we've created this system that literally papers over these challenges, right? And so the brands and retailers don't see it. They just see, oh, I need a piece of paper. And that piece of paper allows me to then market my goods as such and fetch a higher price. But really, like I said, behind that piece of paper, there's a lot of challenges and there's a lot of pain, particularly in smallholder communities around that, you know? So I guess that would be my thing, is we've got to put farmers in at the center of the table, in the discussion and really understand what they need. And then we then have sustainable cotton.
Yeah. And Kristen, you mentioned, a really good point that I think sometimes gets forgotten, whether it's sustainable organic cotton, you know, it's this great story of the environment. And I think that's, you know, it's a very important story of what's happening to the environment. But you also mentioned that, you know, the economics. And when, you know, people sometimes I think forget with sustainability, it really is the three pillars. Yes. Yep. You know, we can measure, we can give the data, which we do a lot of, we can trace it, but it is about, you know, the people pillar of having the farmer there, helping educate, understand why he's doing the practices he's doing. But then also that financial piece and that economic piece, because, you know, it is tough. You know, we see farmers going out of business every day. I think 2020 and 2021, some of the highest rate of farmer suicide that's ever happened because of the financial burden and the burden that's being placed on them. Because yeah, cotton prices may be going up to $2, but you know, their other input prices, whether it's fertilizer or other things, are up, you know,
they're also
200% to 300%. You know, they can't get parts for equipment. Last year, some of our growers were looking at trying to harvest cotton and they couldn't get parts for their equipment. So they're having to rely on their neighbor. And so I think what you said is so important to remember. And it all goes into telling that story, you know, that we're both very passionate about.
Yeah. And look, I think that's exactly that. I mean, that's where, you know, at Sorcery, we are standard agnostic. We look at standards as an affirmation of what we already know. We don't look at them as confirmations of what we don't know. Right.
Right.
And I think that's an important phrase that has been helpful to understand, you know, again, we need to know more. And I don't expect brands and retailers to become agronomic experts themselves. At the end of the day, they're not even buying fiber. I mean, some of them are through our program directly, which is exciting. And that's really cutting edge on their end, but most of them are buying finished goods. Right. And so we have to bring them on this journey. It's critical. And that's ultimately what, you know, what we're trying to do with models like direct to grower and you know what E3 has been doing and another handful of organizations. But we need to bring that visibility, and people need to understand that you know, first and foremost, it is economics. I don't actually, you know, contrary to the three pillar thing or you know, I don't see it at all. I see it's with transparent, fair, and efficient trade, sustainability becomes a dividend. And you can already see that a lot of growers in the United States, whether they're, you know, fall under the banner of E3 and, you know, they're using the BASF technology, or they're part of the US Cotton Trust Protocol system, or they're both, you know, or whatever it is, they're investing in their farms to create efficiency. And through that efficiency, they're achieving sustainability outcomes, whether they're going from a fallow irrigation to drip irrigation, from, you know, using less fertilizers and doing, you know, other types of bio soil amendments and things like that, right? Because they're running a business, and that to me is the outcome, right?
You know, Crispin, I think we're all in agreement that it is damn hard to be a farmer. Doesn't matter where you are. Doesn't matter what country. Doesn't matter what portion of a country. I mean, that is a very, very hard occupation. So
yeah, and it's the most important occupation in the world. There's no, there's farmers are the only indispensable people on the planet. I'm sorry, I'm indispensable in what I do.
but everyone, I mean, if you're a farmer, yes, you're talking about not only clothing, but you're talking about food, right? So, you know, I mean, it's just that that whole agricultural complex is essential to life. So, and you, I think you really put it really well just now, and super impressed. And again, I go back to the Times story, because the Times story did a good job of researching and showing how if it's papered over, that does provide the ability of, okay, I'll charge you a little extra here because of some piece of paper. And, you know, whether that's honest or not, you know, again, the article implies that that's not the case, that's not honest. But again, I think at the end of the day, all this stuff really kind of revolves around farmers who find themselves in situations, or like in the article's example, where like Indian farmers are really in effect losing out, and they're kind of being used and manipulated for a supply chain, the benefit of a different supply chain. So having said that, one question I've wanted to always, I've been meaning to ask you forever, and I don't know why I didn't earlier. Is it just cotton that you're really focusing on in the field, or do you do other raw materials that go into the textile supply chain, like leather, for example, or synthetic fibers or other materials?
Yeah, I mean, through Sorcery, it's just cotton right now. It's the, you know, in a lot of ways, the most complex supply chain of all of them. You know, there's 6,700 gins globally, to put that into context. And there are 12 polyester suppliers globally. So, you know, major ones, I mean, in the sense of you know, the bulk of the fiber produced. With Sorcery, we're just focusing on cotton, to answer your question, but you know, we take those same principles in FiberTrace and apply them to the clients that we're working through on the FiberTrace side, who want to trace leather, who want to trace linen, who want to trace polyester or wool or whatever it is. It's the same, you know, underlying fundamentals of our approach that is valuable to brands and suppliers, not the fiber itself. I just have an affinity, of course, toward cotton. And like I said, cotton is by far the most complex of these supply chains by a long stretch.
I didn't realize how much it is. And one thing I realized that, you know, from the beginning to the end, from our beginning of our breeders and the science and the, you know, 10 years or more it takes to bring cotton, a variety, to the market, to the farmers, all the way through. It's amazing. It's not as simple, like you said earlier. So many people think the food comes from the grocery store, or the shirt, their cotton t-shirt or jeans from the local store. But it really is, when you know, when you stop and think about it, it really is pretty complex.
I mean, cotton in some respects is, what comes to mind as I'm thinking about it, it's like that old, you know, Frank Sinatra adage, you know, about New York, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. So if you can make it in cotton, you can do anything, right? Because that's of the good complexities, the market pressures, you know, the way that the system has been built needs to fundamentally change, right? Because it's leaving farmers out of it's not giving them their due credit and or respect, but also not giving them the resources that they need to actually deliver to what we're asking them to, you know, and that's I think at the core of what that article talks about to some extent, but also, and that's the same thing when it comes to impact reporting, right? Like, you know, we talk about water usage or soil health, right, Bob? And same with Jennifer, what you guys are capturing. But like, at the end of the day, let's put one of the things when I was at OCA, we didn't even capture that information, one, because we didn't know how, right? There was new technologies and new ability to do capture environmental information. But one of the things that we were able to capture, and probably, you know, to some extent in OCA probably still has this data, is we were able to capture household and economic data of the farmers. And that was the, making the business case was the first and foremost, most important thing. And then once we made the business case, then we can start to benchmark, well, how is your water? How is your soil health? What kind of, you know, pesticides and fertilizers are you using, et cetera, right? Because if we don't, again, if the business side doesn't work, we don't have sustain. It's a dividend,
right?
I mean, I keep stressing that because we talk about like they're in balance, but we're not. We just need to reinvent the way that business is done so that it achieves better business and sustainability outcomes.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I know we've talked some about it. And as I know our listeners know, I love cotton, and I can tell you have that passion too. And as I said, I spent, 20 years in the agriculture space. So working with the growers and that space of it, and kind of started working downstream with textile and apparel. And, and I kind of have some of my view of it just because of my background, but would love to hear from you as we kind of go forward. What do you think are some of the greatest challenges that are going to be faced by the textile and apparel industries in the coming years?
I mean, I think outside of, the continued volatility and kind of, what's happening with climate change, water scarcity, just flooding, right? Everything around climate change is a huge, looming, scary thing for all agriculture, right? As climate literally it's not just getting hotter, but climates are shifting, right? Like deserts are being formed at the same time. Wetlands or other regions that may not be used to getting a lot of water is happening, right? You can no longer, go to the Farmer's Almanac book and look at what the weather is going to be for the coming year. We just don't know, right? Because of just what's happening. But I think outside of the climate change is accountability is a big thing. Particularly in the sustainability space, because right now, without data, without actually going down to the farm, anybody can, with the right marketing budgets, can create their own sustainable cotton. Like one of the ideas that I had was, I'm going to start a website called Crispin Super Fabulous Awesome Earth Saving Cotton, right? If I put enough resources behind that, I could become the next, whatever label out there, and the consumer will buy it, right? And so what I mean by accountability is we're going to actually have to start investing in growers with the, right now it's a buzzword, but like with regenerative agriculture, regenerative requires data. It requires adoption of real practices. Getting a grower to go from a tilling system to a no-till system is a huge, huge leap.
Right.
I have a better chance of dunking over Michael Jordan than a lot of growers have. than adopting that system and actually being able to make the economics of their farm work, right?
Right.
And so, and that may be an extreme statement, the Michael Jordan thing, but at the end of the day, it just requires a lot.
Makes the point, Kristen.
It makes the point. And I think that we have to put data behind it, and data requires investment, and change requires investment. I mean, one of the things and we don't have exact data on this, but let's go into the organic cotton space quickly. And this will probably make your jaws drop a little bit. And because it makes mine when we started to see the data is all of the suppliers that we work with in the organic cotton space, we ask them, a number of commercial questions and things like that. But one of the things that we ask them is how much their cost of certification is. And what we've been able to kind of discern through some of the reporting that's been done by the certification standard, the standard holders, et cetera, is that we estimate that the total certification in organic cotton is north of $200 million a year. There are only 222,000 farmers as reported by Textile Exchange. So that means that, and most of those farmers are smallholder farmers. That means that certification itself is costing the sector roughly $800 to $1,100 per farmer. And that system cannot actually verify that the farmers are even growing organic cotton in the first place. And keep in mind, these are smallholder growers that literally net costs out of all of their cotton produce for the whole year, maybe make $250 net. Okay, they're managing a hectare and a half in India. So to me, there's something really skewed with that we're spending all of this money on this golden pipeline of organic cotton chain of custody, but we could be taking that money and investing in these growers, providing and their communities, providing them, non-GMO seeds. I'm sure that if there's enough of a business case for BASF, they would, build the infrastructure for non-GMO like they have in Turkey and in Greece and other places that, you know, that are that require this by law, right? And so how do we shift these markets so that we actually can start to invest in these farmers and give the farmers the tools that they need to have the output that we're wanting them? But right now we're just pretending. And that's what's so frustrating. Does that make sense a bit? And I, you know, I don't want to push on organic cotton because it's the same thing even in like BCI. Yes. If you take BCI, now I said $200 million for plus for organic cotton. BCI only puts $16 million roughly into the chain every year at farm level. And so that's not enough. Right. And so, you know, we have to start looking at the economics and we have to start being accountable to what we're saying and not overpromising and underperforming or selling the image of sustainability where we need to be actually practicing the impact. And that is where I see the industry going in the coming years. I hope that's what I'm working toward. And, you know, I'll put in another 5 years and if we see some change, great, which we're already starting to see. But if we don't, then you know what? I'm going to open up that taco stand that I've always dreamed about.
Well, Kristen, I'm going to, you open up the taco stand and I'm going to take the sailboat and I can be the bartender and serve margaritas like that.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Because I think you're right. Like sometimes, you know, you see it and say it and do it. And then it's like, okay, well, you know, what does it take to change? And it is some of the industry I think is changing. And then you kind of, you're like, okay, well, how much is it going to change before it's regulated and required versus how much is going to change because, hey, this is the right thing to do.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today and really appreciate it. I know I probably have a ton more questions than Bob does too, but that just means we'll have to get you on the podcast again. Just have to leave waiting for some more. But Kristen, if our listeners wanted to, you know, contact you or reach out or just kind of see some of the great work that you and your team are doing, what is the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, just by email. You can go to our website, which is thesorcery.io. Maybe you can put it into the podcast itself. And then there's links to, you know, what we do, the Direct to Grower program. And of course, you know, you can always email us and we'll get back to you. We're a small team, but we're all a team that works, you know, 50, 60 hours a week because we love what we do. And so we try to be of service to everybody from the brands to the growers, to everyone in between to add value to their day-to-day work.
Absolutely. Well, again, Kristen, thanks for joining and Bob as well. And I'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for joining us and really hope that you enjoyed the show. Should you have any questions about the E3 Sustainable Cotton Program, please email me at e3cotton@basf.com, as well as don't forget to follow us on social media at E3 Sustainable Cotton. Thanks so much and see you next time.